Right now, though, the Shadow Treasurer, Joe Hockey, has committed an Abbott government to delivering a budget surplus each and every year. Yesterday, he ruled out big stimulus spending too in the event of another downturn. And Joe Hockey has also delivered a blunt message to the protectionists in the coalition, saying there won't be any extra help for industries struggling against the high dollar. The opposition's trying to seize the initiative as the federal government concedes slower than expected growth at the end of last year will make it harder to achieve its own much promised surplus in the coming year. Joe Hockey, welcome back to Breakfast.
Thanks very much, Fran.
First to the surplus, in your speech you said a coalition government, quote, will achieve a cash surplus in every year in our first term and after that. Does that mean what it sounds like, the budget will never be in the red regardless of the circumstances under the coalition?
No, well, based on the information that we have available today, which is the mid-year economic and fiscal outlook released by the government just before Christmas, the budget should get to surplus with some effort from the government on the basis of an extra $38 billion of tax in the next 6 months. Now, whether that occurs or not, we don't know. But the government's not actually making any hard yards in reducing its expenditure. It's simply riding a wave of tax increases. So based on that information, we would make the hard decisions to cut the waste, and that would help to bring the budget back to surplus, and based on the information available, we could keep delivering them.
Well, Wayne Swan's promising some hard yards in the next budget, so I guess we'll wait and see. But
he,
it's
he
also
does every budget, Fran. I mean, you'll recall this because you've been a witness to it, but every budget he talks about how hard his job is and how he's going to have to make tough decisions, and then he doesn't make them.
Well, the Treasury boss, Martin Parkinson, said it's going to be a hard job. He told a business audience yesterday that tax collections had fallen significantly since the GFC, hadn't really recovered and wouldn't for many years to come, so surpluses are likely to remain at best razor thin.
And then he added, unless governments are prepared to make hard decisions about reducing expenditure. And that's hugely important. This is the thing. This government has massively increased government expenditure, and it's wasteful. It's, you know, even now, we thought the end of it was school hall wastage and $900 checks going to dead people, but even now you've got to roll out a set top boxes at massive multiples of what the private sector can do it at. And this sort of waste is the stuff that they just don't know how to clamp down on, and that's the stuff that will help to deliver the budget back to surplus.
You've promised to give details of how you might do some of this in your budget reply speech, is that right?
What I said was we will deliver some medium-term fiscal rules, and I think it's important to have fiscal rules. This government has fiscal rules, but it's breaking them at the moment. And when we talk about fiscal rules, we're talking about a framework for the budget. And if we're not delivering surpluses when you have unemployment at around 5.1% and you have around the best terms of trade in 100 years, then the question is, when is the federal government going to deliver a surplus? And
well, when the company tax receipts recover, presumably.
Well, but it's not just company tax. I mean, personal income tax is by far the largest tax. And with an unemployment rate of 5.1%, that is a very generous stream of revenue to the Commonwealth government. But it is important, and we need to get, you know, convey this, and I think Labor understands it now at long last. If you start delivering a surplus, you start to reduce downward pressure on interest rates, you start to increase the pool of national savings, and that inoculates us, so far as you can, against further volatility in the global economy.
Okay.
It's a really important point, Fran. A surplus is not just a wish. In Australia, it's particularly important because the government, when it runs a deficit, the government borrows 80% of the money to fund the deficit from overseas, and that puts upward pressure on the Australian dollar.
Can I clarify, when you spoke in the speech yesterday, you used the term cash surplus. We'll promise to achieve a cash surplus in every year, which could be achieved by selling assets. It's not the same as an underlying surplus, which is generally regarded as a more important benchmark. Is that a distinction you were trying to make?
No. I mean, it's just the terminology that we chose to use.
But will you equally pledge you'll achieve a surplus in every year in our first year?
Yeah, we will deliver a surplus, Fran. There's not many assets left for the Commonwealth government to sell, I can tell you. The previous coalition government and the Labor government before that sold Qantas and
DAA. I think there's still Medibank private there, isn't there?
Well, we are absolutely committed to it, but I don't think it's going to be the magic bullet. In a $370 billion budget each year, Medibank private, the last figure I saw was it's worth $4 billion.
Okay, well, let's move it through, because there was a lot in your speech yesterday. You're talking up sovereign risk as part of the Australian equation now. You said, quote, sovereign risk was never an issue before, but since the election of Labor in 2007, analysts have added it to the Australian equation. Now, sovereign risk refers to the ability of a country to service its debt, doesn't it? Surely you're not saying Australia's at risk of default.
No. Sovereign risk is much more than that. Sovereign risk is stability of policy as well, and and the stability of the government. And if you've just got to look at the performance of the Australian equities markets in comparison with other jurisdictions, and you'd say to yourself, as numerous analysts have, if I can name one, Charlie Aiken from Bell Potters puts out regular missives to his clients. And that goes around the world as well as to the Australian markets, expressing absolute disgust at what's happening in Canberra and referring regularly to sovereign risk.
But the three international ratings agencies have given Australia a AAA rating. How can a country do better than that?
Because the AAA rating is on default, Fran. This goes beyond it. And if you look at sovereign risk, there's no better example than the mining tax. And for a moment, let's just have a look at what's happened. So Wayne Swan criticised the mining companies, called them rich internationals, multinationals, and didn't tell them about the tax that was coming. It's now disclosed in the battle with Kevin Rudd over the last few weeks that everyone was blindsided by Wayne Swan's actions on the mining tax. Then the government negotiated with just three miners to come up with a new tax. The total revenue from the tax, and it's had various iterations and it's had three or four different revenue streams, but the total return from the mining tax over the next 3 years is the equivalent of just 3 months of borrowing by this government to pay for its deficit in the last 3 months. So it's not a river of gold, but it has created such volatility, it has created such uncertainty that various people, various investors, have said, gee whiz, Australia is a harder place to invest in because of the confusion of the government and the dysfunctionality of the government.
Well, the Reserve Bank doesn't see it that way. As Australia is seen by foreign investors, including central banks and sovereign wealth funds, as an attractive destination for investment. That's the Deputy Governor of the RBA.
Yeah, there are flows coming into Australia because the rest of the world is in such bad shape at the moment. But let me say again, if you're suggesting there is no sovereign risk, I'd urge you to speak to analysts out there and ask them, including international investors in London and other places, have you, for the first time, started to think about sovereign risk in Australia, the risk of policy backflips, the risk of uncertainty?
Can I go to the other claim you made, the promise you made, really, that the coalition government wouldn't be using stimulus spending to combat another downturn as the first response? I'd prefer to see greater use of monetary policy for managing demand. Now, who would be running the economy under the coalition, the government or the Reserve Bank?
Oh, no, it's got to be a partnership in that sense, and it really refers to a downturn.
And when we say downturn, are we thinking about a shock like the GFC?
Well, it may well be a shock, yeah. And it depends on whether it's, a slow growth or whether it's a rapid slowing in growth or whether it's actually a financial shock, as we had previously. But the point I made is that the fiscal stimulus that governments used around the world, that is, budgetary stimulus, won't be there next time if we have a similar shock. Therefore, if Australia has a fiscal stimulus, there'll be significant leakage into other jurisdictions. And, the New Zealand Prime Minister said to me, from his lips to my ears, he said it was great Australia handed out $900 checks because all the Kiwis came home to New Zealand to spend it.
Yeah, but that's the same. That's the way the world works. I mean, we benefit from China doing the same thing too. The advice from the head of Treasury at the time was go hard, go early, go household. His advice was clearly for the government to spend.
And the government didn't let him down. In fact, we now know, thanks to George Megalogenis, that when he recommended $5 billion of spending, the government went out and said, no, let's go 10. And what that meant was that the government went so hard with its stimulus, spending money, which had a lag factor. In fact, they were still spending money on the BER in 2012, that the Reserve Bank dropped its cash rate to only 3%, where it had the capacity to go much further. And that's the point. It is for, you know, we are heading, from my perspective, we are heading into possibly 20 years of volatility. And we're going to have ups and downs. The best way to inoculate in this sort of circumstance is to get the budget to surplus, to pay off government debt, and to first turn to the Reserve Bank to do some of the heavy lifting by reducing interest rates quickly. Because in Australia, we're very lucky. Most people have variable home loans. And as Dr. Bernanke, Ben Bernanke, said to me in December, he was jealous of the fact that Australia has a lot of people with various variable home loans, because that means it flows through to the household very quickly, whereas in the United States and the United Kingdom and other jurisdictions, most people have fixed home loans, so cuts in official interest rates don't flow through quickly.
Joe Hockey, we've got to go, but just one other point you made. You said a coalition government wouldn't be in the business of propping up industries that don't have a sustainable future. Which industries are those?
Oh, friend, I can tell you, I'm certainly not going to name them.
Why not?
Well, because that may well be the final kick in the guts of some of those industries. But I think we've got to be honest about it. And as Phil Lowe and Martin Parkinson said, you've got to focus on putting your spare money into the industries that are going to continue to grow and grow strongly over the next few years. And
does that include the car industry?
I'm not going to speculate, Fran. I love driving my Holden.
Joe Hockey, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Fran.
Shadow Treasurer Joe Hockey. It's 8:17 on Breakfast.